Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map. Hello, listeners. Welcome again to another episode of These Parts. I'm one of your hosts, Elliot McNally, and with me, as always, is my brother, my friend, my traveling companion, Vince McNally. How's it going, Vince?
Elliot, it's going great. What an interesting town we're in this week.
It's very interesting. Before we get to that, as we usually do, we have some house cleaning to attend to at the top of the episode. As you know, I just spoke to Xander on the phone about the idea I had about a paywall.
A paywall for what in particular? You have to loop me in on these conversations earlier, Elliot, but at least get me up to speed now. What sort of paywall are you talking about?
Well, I'm sure our listeners know that paywalls are becoming more in vogue in podcasts more and more, and it allows people to create more content if listeners want to pay for it. I thought that would be a great idea to create, you know, these parts of bonus episodes, but Xander informed me that it's actually not our listeners, but us who are behind a paywall of listeners.
Elliot, please explain.
So apparently, Xander made us a Patreon account in which we pay per listener for this show. So we are becoming even more in debt before we release our forthcoming almanac. I had no idea about this.
Wow, that really seems like an oversight on our end. Let's get our lawyer on the phone and have Xander sit down in a room. We'll add it to the lengthy list of legal snafus he's embroiled us in.
I also realized there was a Patreon account to get our show off the air. Which there are more than we have listeners.
Xander 0010100 is the same username for both. I think there might be something there, Elliot. Let's look into it. But for now, let's get back to the episode.
Let's do it, Vince. We are in an interesting town. A town I think we should put on the map.
Great idea.
So, listeners at home, please take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall maps and your commemorative push pins. Get ready to stick a pin in Maynard, North Dakota. Vince, why are we here?
Maynard, North Dakota is a supremely interesting town. Now, Maynard's got a rule on the books in their legal legislation that says no structure in the town can be taller than the town hall.
Pretty now, commonplace.
Absolutely. This in and of itself is not particularly interesting. Your own small town probably has a similar charter, but the interesting thing about Maynard is that the town hall tragically burned to the ground in 1911. They never wound up rebuilding the town hall, and now the rule still stands. What does that mean for the structures in Maynard, Elliot?
It means that no structures are above 2.7 feet tall. That goes for all buildings, all dwellings, all structures of any kind that are edifices in the town cannot be above this very short length. And it raises some questions, obviously, that we're going to get to. It raises some concerns and it raises some challenges for the many patrons of Maynard, North Dakota.
Absolutely. But before we dive into all that, let's go ahead and stick a pin in.
And there it is. And listeners, I know that usually this is where we would throw it over to the guest. Today, Vince and I are going solo, as it were. We don't have a guest. And Vince, if I may say, we don't need some colorful character chiming in every single episode.
You know, These Parts was doing just fine for years before guests started sticking their nose. Well, you know, I shouldn't speak out of turn. Most of them are very generous individuals. But all the same, it's kind of nice just to be you and me back on the mic.
I feel like I can see you even more clearly this week than any other week.
Strangely, that is true, even though we record right next to each other every single week. It's just something about today.
Hopefully, we're coming in just as clear to you, and you have that pin secured right in that map. Vince, this is a town about a pretty strict law, and I think that there is a particular segment that will work swimmingly for us.
Let's dive right into You Can't Do That Here.
You Can't Do That Here, listeners, is my and Vince's opportunity to explore some rather outdated town laws. And Vince, because there's so much you can't do in Maynard, North Dakota in terms of building. We almost have to look at it as what you can do here.
Yes. The loopholes. How do you actually have a civilization where no structure can be taller than the last remaining charred piece of wood that remains the doorframe of a long extinct town hall?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the easiest answer starts and ends with roofless buildings.
Mm-hmm. Of course, most humans, adult humans, are above the height of 2.7 feet. They can't live and inhabit buildings or work in them that are that short. So if you have a more open concept, a very literal home and dwelling, it's going to be a lot easier for you to inhabit that space.
A lot of, we can talk at length about the challenges you have to overcome. One that comes to mind is, if you want to stay out of the elements, you need a series of intricately connected balloons holding saran wrap aloft above your belongings. But let's also talk about the benefits of such a law. I think it was Mahatma Gandhi who said, limitations breed creativity. And that is certainly on display here in Maynard. The line of sight, you can see it all.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally see it all in one panoramic swivel around on your heels.
Mm-hmm. Every single person in the town, I think, is more connected because of their ability to see each other and be all up in each other's business.
Also, there's a distinct lack of privacy. You can't have an enclosed shower area. That counts as a structure. No freestanding rooms. What is indeed a house, but a series of rooms?
Mm-hmm.
That was also Gandhi who said that. And so what you'll have is a lot of those sort of standing beach showers. And, you got to get comfortable with one another's bodies if you're going to spend any significant amount of time here in Maynard.
Another Gandhi quote.
Yeah. Yeah. Gandhi, Gandhi was a big fan of open concept rooms. A shame he didn't live long enough to see it really come to fruition here in Maynard. I don't think he ever visited North Dakota, but
it wasn't on his list. I think that our listeners are probably curious as to what spurned all these laws. And to do that, we have to almost journey back to 1911.
It was a simpler time.
It was a time of a lot of ribbon-cutting ceremonies. The town of Maynard was bustling, and there were so many different buildings opening and the town halls opening that they decided to expedite this process by using dynamite to blow up all the ribbons to really, get these buildings more open. And in doing so, the mayor of Maynard at the time, Samuel Wilmington, accidentally blew up the town hall.
Yeah, there was quite a craze. The turn of the century, the early 1910s and so, there were a lot of crazes. It felt like everything was a craze.
A crazy time.
One of those crazes was ribbon cuttings, and the other craze was nitroglycerin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you guys are familiar, Nobel Peace Prize winner, I forget his name, maybe it was Nobel himself, that came up with nitroglycerin, and in an effort to propagate its use in America, Mr. Wilmington did indeed try to expedite the ribbon cutting, blew the town hall to the ground, but in order to save face and not to unwrite the very recently written law about building height, he stubbornly stuck his foot in the ashes of what was formerly his mahogany desk and said, no, the law stands, and the rest is history.
But it leads us to another town law. You'd think that people now build their homes up to 2.7 feet, and there it is. But they actually, you have to build an entire structure in the town and burn it to the ground to 2.7 feet or below.
Yeah, it's a fascinating tradition. Some out there might say it's wasteful. Others, dangerous. What I say is it's good old-fashioned American tradition. That's what it is. There's a lot of corner cutting here in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people trying to get it done the quick and easy way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Mayor Wilmington knew then what we are learning again now. It's that if you take the hard road, you get a better result.
And there's a lot of community fostered by building things, and there's even more community fostered by destroying things. And a lot of people are really keen on how that brings together their community. We're talking about how everyone can see each other at all times. It's a phenomenon around here they call prairie dogging. Anytime you're looking around, you can always see people's heads poking up, whether it be from their desks at work or from their bedrooms or their showers.
Yes, prairie dogging. I don't know what it means in your part of the world, but for us it means inquisitive glances over half-burning walls. And I think it's just really, it's beautiful in a way. The town is really connected, like you said. And also, you know, this is very interesting. They brought in a shaman a couple of years ago to conduct a study. And that was stress levels in many American cities. You know, you've got your Pittsburghs very high, your Chicago's through the roof. New York City, hello. But here in Maynard, stress levels are at a countrywide low. And the shaman himself attributed this to frequent outlets for stress relief in the form of burning down structures and razing other buildings.
At this point in America, shamans were responsible for conducting all Gallup polls.
And that's still true today, if I'm not mistaken, Elliot. I'm no expert, but
I think Gallup himself was a shaman.
Like named after a horse, right? Short for galloping horse. Yes, of course.
They tried other means of destroying these buildings to level them, some of which included running a train of horses over buildings, other than burning down. But they just felt like the burning harkened back so much clearer to 1911. So they kept that methodology along.
Absolutely. Now, Elliot, we'd be remiss not to talk about the lengths that they go to ensure, even though, you know, it's a town steeped in tradition, but they still want the most bang for their buck, nitroglycerin notwithstanding. So when you're burning down a structure, you want it to rest at that exact 2.1 feet level. Now, talk about some of the ways they ensure that that happens.
Well, there's a bunch of different ways. One is they build the building and then they take just a Sharpie or a Crayola and they draw a line. And then they hope that it gets down to that length.
Not a scientific process. You know, more of an art.
Another way is there used to be an old amusement park in town and there was a sign that said, coincidentally, you had to be this tall, 2.7 feet, to ride the ride. So they've used that and repurposed that. Or take a small child who's 2.7 feet tall and put them next to the building and hope that it gets down to that level.
Sometimes they'll give them a little watering can to like start watering the fire once it reaches their head height. It's a very you know, Norman Rockwell type image. A little child gleefully pouring a plastic decanter of water on a fire. Elliot, it's really interesting stuff. You know, we've had to adjust. We had to leave the RV at the city limits. Seems to happen to us once every few weeks.
We could bring the wheels and axles and the chassis because that wasn't above 2.7 feet.
Unfortunately, you can't really drive the RV at that point. A lot of the internals, the engine, you know, the drivetrain. I'm not a mechanic, but we needed those. We took it apart initially, and then we sort of sat in it and hoped for gravity to push us into the city.
Yes.
That didn't work. We wasted a week. Yeah. Xander was unhappy. But
you know, if I had a dollar for every time we dismantled and rebuilt the RV, I'd have enough money to fund our Patreon account to get more listeners.
And enough to hopefully fund whatever domain gremlin is hosting the...
Are there domain gremlins? Are these in the same line as mailer daemons?
Elliot, you know, I'm not a web engineer myself, but we need to get that darn Patreon who's trying to get us off the air, off the internet. And I don't know how you go about doing it. I assumed a domain gremlin was behind it.
I think we just fire Xander. That's probably...
Step one is probably fire Xander. But we're not quitters. Just like the people in Maine aren't quitters. They don't let the stipulations, harsh as they may be, sort of cramp their style. Anything that you have in any normal city in the United States, they have here in Maine are just a little bit shorter.
You know, walking around town, you're going to see many of the same things you would always see. And again, just to remind you, it's just the man-made objects that are 2.7 feet tall. They're not going to decimate the natural landscape and make that 2.7 feet. So there are very tall trees and the animals are still in existence in flora and fauna around Maynard. It's just the buildings and any mode of transportation is 2.7 feet tall.
Absolutely. And if you're feeling like maybe this description is leaving you with more questions than answers, well, boy, have we got a segment for you.
It's called Wouldn't You Like to Know?
Now, listeners, Wouldn't You Like to Know is our weekly opportunity for you to write in with your specific questions, inquisitions, and queries about the towns that we're staying in. We and, if applicable, our guests read those questions aloud on air, and we always have time for three. Elliot, I can already see you, even clearer than normally, unfurling, unfolding unfurling the letter before you. What does it say?
This one comes from Shane in Tilson, New Hampshire. Thanks for writing, Shane. Shane wants to know, he was interested in visiting Maynard, but he is still a little weary about the Airbnb situation. It seems like it's a, you know, some Airbnbs are a little too personal. You're into many people's business at once, and he was saying, you know, are there any loopholes that people get around for their own homes so they don't have to have just 2.7 feet tall dwellings?
A good question, a practical question. If you're looking to travel to Maynard, these are the sort of things you need to learn. We're learning them firsthand. Elliot, there are workarounds. There are ways. People are as ingenuitive here as they are anywhere, and people are always striving to sort of find comfort in the lack of space.
For instance, the law stipulates if you're fluent in legalese, which Vince and I are.
It's a very droning language.
Yes.
Not lyrical. Not a lot of great operas written in legalese.
But we're fluent in it, and we notice that only structural buildings have to be 2.7 feet tall. So there's a lot of lean-tos, a lot of teepees, a lot of yurts.
Draping something over an overhanging tree branch to build a roof for yourself. That's interesting. Also, structures only, man-made structures. That means you can live under a tall animal, for instance. There are a lot of tall horses here that work as sort of mobile homes. A heavy blanket or a horse poncho is draped over the horse, and the person will live beneath it.
Yes. There's also a burgeoning 4-H community here that tries to breed the tallest cows and horses so that one can have an even taller house. Because in Maynard, although everyone is very proud of their short homes, there is a hierarchical system of the taller the animal you live under, the more power you have in town.
Typically, I mean, that's true in all cultures. I took a very relaxing cow cab where it's a hammock strapped one rung to the bell around its neck, the other to the udder.
Oh.
And you sort of just drift along as the cow saunters, plus fresh milk.
You can't go wrong with that. You know, another loophole I ran into, Vince, is that they can't catch you if they can't see you doing it. And I think that's true of a lot of laws in this fair town. So if your home is, quote, invisible, they won't fault you for it. So there's a lot of homes that are 2.7 feet tall structurally, and then the rest is glass, completely see-through.
Unfortunate news for the international stone-throwing competition, which had to close down its chapter here in Maynard after that loophole was discovered. That said, a nice way, the Maynard Library is actually, people tend to sort of look the other way so the weather doesn't ruin the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the local Stone Throwers Union 505 came through town and they were none too pleased that their chapter was not throwing any stones. But, you know, they decided that they would only use dynamite to both unveil ribbon ceremonies and to kill any livestock or animals that they would eat. So you can't throw stones here, but
you can blow them up. Well, thanks for writing in. That was a really interesting question. Glad we got to go through it. I've got the next one right here.
Great.
And this one's from Petrie, and he's in Tampa Bay, Florida.
Great. What does Petrie have to say?
Petrie says, hey, these parts. Happy to hear my letter read. Well, I guess he's optimistic about his chances. As a shaman, I'm glad you're in a shaman-friendly town. There just aren't enough of them here in the United States anymore.
Local, probably. There's a little stamp I'm seeing on his letter that he's a member of the local shaman union.
Wow, that is an ornate signet it's got going on there. Well, so he continues, as a shaman, there aren't enough opportunities to discuss shaman, shaman art, and shaman media. In this country.
It's a real shame.
Couldn't agree more, Petrie. He goes on to say, but luckily, you're in a town that has always celebrated shaman culture. I'm speaking, of course, of the shaman documentary Deliverance, which was recorded in the 1970s and set in Maynard, North Dakota. If you would take this opportunity to talk about it, live long, my shaman brothers and sisters.
I think that's a letter that we've read with the most usage of the word shaman ever. Maybe the second most.
You know, it sounds like he has a chip on his shoulder. He really wanted to drive home the fact that he was a shaman, and he wants us to talk about Deliverance, which, to my recollection, does not have a shaman in the movie.
I don't think so, but I have read that John Voight hired a special shaman to make sure the weather held out. during the different canoe scenes.
It works like a charm, too. Voight does not like to get wet.
Which was very difficult for him in those canoe sequences. They said, Mr. Voight, you know, you have to be on top of the water, gliding on the canoe. Don't worry. I know that an oar sent some trickles of water his way once, and they had to shut down the set for several days.
Voight was infamous for keeping a tweezers on him that he would use to pluck out Burt Reynolds' mustache hairs when he would accidentally splash him with oar water.
He was notorious for not even liking water vapor. It's obviously very hot in Georgia, where, I'm sorry to say, Mr. Shaman, the movie Deliverance was shot and set, not in Maynard. So when the water would evaporate, Voight would have a shaman cast a spell around him as an almost orb-like guard against the water.
Famously, when a shaman had to take a sick day to deal with rheumatoid arthritis, Voight put a plastic bag over his head and tied it shut and refused to heed any advice to the contrary, hoping that the water vapor wouldn't get in his nostrils. After he was discharged from Atlanta General Hospital, the shaman was thankfully returned to the set.
So, you know, even outside of Orlando, shaman culture is still thriving. And, you know, Vince, I can't really comprehend anymore if our knowledge of the movie Deliverance stems from doing these parts so much, or if we had previous knowledge of it, which just played elegantly into our podcast.
Yeah, it's strange. We didn't start out as Deliverance experts, but...
We're buffs.
But we've become buffs. It's just that every once in a while, people write in with that question.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of fans of the movie out there,
mm-hmm.
But I feel like we've gotten almost the same question three or four times at this point.
I think so, and hopefully this person that we're going to read the letter from next has something else to talk about. It comes from Wendy in Devereaux, Wyoming.
Wendy, thanks for writing. Love Wyoming.
Wendy says, "Hey guys, is arson still legal there?"
Interesting question, Wendy. And the answer is yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll let my co-host expound upon this, but arson isn't strictly legal because there is no legal classification of arson.
That's true. Especially in Maynard, they are using a type of arson, you could say, to burn down these buildings to the correct and appropriate height. Unfortunately, there are some more gregarious people who want to literally play with fire in the town. There are definitely people who are more skilled at burning down these buildings appropriately, and there is a certain pride in if you can do that. So you have a lot of people building houses and burning them down all the way accidentally.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always a tragedy because then you've got to build an entire new house just to burn down again to hopefully it comes near to 2.1 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bucket of monkeys. But what happens when you have an arsonist who's actually good at the job, mm-hmm. is they create sort of a controlled burn.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't really in good faith be called arson.
That's true. And because of the old amusement park that may or may not be haunted, that was in town, there were many, I guess to put this lightly, a freak show. And there were those guys that blew fire out of their mouths. And so when the circus closed down, amusement park closed down, they found a new skill set in burning down houses.
Absolutely. So there's a proud fire-breathing tradition that exists to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a lot of people that would once be deemed, you know, in a less PC, a less sensitive time as circus freaks, find gainful employ here in Maynard. You've got, of course, the strongmen,
mm-hmm.
who have to haul the debris away.
Mm-hmm.
They always enjoy a very lucrative career.
Mm-hmm.
What other quote-unquote, to use the insensitive term, freaks... Are put to great effect here in Maynard, Elliot.
Well, you have the bearded lady, which doesn't really serve too much of a purpose, but people feel somehow more comfortable with her constructing their homes than some of the skilled craftsmen that you can hire.
And Maynard. You know, and in her defense, she's quite an artisan.
that's true.
And you know, you've got the guy who bites heads off chickens.
Yes,
him. I'm not sure what his circus job name is, but every good sideshow had a person who would maim an animal for entertainment of others. And now to this day, he runs a very lucrative rotisserie bar, and I had chicken wings there just last week, and it was really delicious.
What's hard is that when you're using rotisserie chicken so close to the ground, it gets a lot of dirt from the actual ground on it when it's rotating.
Yes, that's true. It was unpleasant. There's not really much more to say about it than that. But you go for the most burned piece.
Yes.
That's all I can say.
There is another circus freak again. I know we've used that word several times now, and it's by no means the PC term. And you can tweet at us or tell us on message boards what you think we should be saying, and we can retroactively edit this episode to include it. But the guy that sticks like needles and swords through his face was also employed just so people had perspective on what they were doing. Yes, your house may be small, but at least you don't have a sword stuck in your face.
The human pincushion, as he calls himself, provides a really valuable service. Sort of a town therapist. Mm-hmm. And then if talking out your problems isn't working, he allows you to jab some sort of serrated object into his face.
And speaking of goods and possibly services, Vince, we have a segment that can address exactly that.
We sure do, and that's called Giving Them the Business.
Listeners, Giving Them the Business is Vince and my opportunity to investigate the local mom-and-pop shops that make a town's economy tick. Vince, I know that it was easier than usual to spot these local businesses. They don't have the signage we're used to. Their signage are more welcome mats, but you can see directly into their stores.
Mat culture is huge here. You can say anything on a mat, and, you know, we just have taken it for granted since we live in this 3D world.
Yes. Lululemon has a huge stake in Maynard, North Dakota, because they make signage that are also yoga mats. And it's very easy for people, especially their offices, to sit on these mats as opposed to standing and crouching down at their computers, let's say.
Absolutely. Mats are huge here, especially given, you know, how many shamans live and work here. Shamans love yoga. And Maynard loves mats. It's a match made in heaven. Sad news for the physio ball industry, which does not have good representation at all here.
If you deflate it a lot, then you can sit on it.
But at that point, you're just using an inferior mat. So what else? You know, there are a lot of industries that you would probably... Flat things are good here. Mm-hmm. Flat is in. Mm-hmm. Flat is the new round, as they say. Mm-hmm. And for instance... Dessert. You and I both love dessert. And
shortbread cookies and cakes.
Shortbread cookies, deflated flan, and of course my personal favorite, crepes. Crepes are huge in Maynard.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of crepe places to go to. Particularly, you don't want to, let's say, be eating a short stack of pancakes or a sandwich that's taller than the establishment you're eating in. It's a sign of disrespect to the proprietor. So if you have a very flat meal... it's going to be less frowned upon.
Yeah, for instance, as you brought up pancakes, if you do want to have pancakes and you're going to have trouble finding them, you can't have a short stack. You have to have a long adjacency of pancakes, is how they call it. And that's pancakes set next to each other, you know, end to end.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of difficulty in this because if there's a long line of pancakes and you're eating one, people might come up and start eating the other.
It's bound to happen. It's actually more likely than not to occur. So either order one pancake or, you know what, skip it altogether. Mm-hmm. Get a crepe.
At any point in time, there's a lot of pancake Pac-Man mazes around town that people follow to different establishments.
The people of Maynard are easily trapped in a pancake loop, so to speak. So enticed by the flatness of the food that they'll sort of finish a pancake and then they'll see out of the corner of their eye another pancake and they'll walk towards it. It's sort of a dirty trick for advertisers. I myself, to testify to how effective it is, found myself in an auto dealership after following one too many pancakes. So
another thing that's huge here, Vince, that I've noticed is, as we've established, you can't have walls that are too high. And so that makes showers very impractical. And you'd think, well, take a bath. But people still like that water pressure, that feel. So bidets are huge here because they shoot water up instead of down.
That's right, Elliot. I think we were really unlucky, and this is why we need to hire a scheduling assistant, because we just missed bidets days by a week. And I heard it's one of the nation's largest, one of the 15 largest bidet expos in the country. Mm-hmm. And we could have reported live from bidets days, and we didn't.
It's sponsored by a local mom-and-pop shop called Bidaze, B-I-D-A-Z-E, because you walk in and there's so many bidets.
You're bidazed by how many bidets there are. And
one up by Bidazled.
Bidazled does not sell bidets. You bring your bidet in to Bidazled, and they will ornament your bidet. Mm-hmm. I made that mistake. Looked quite foolish. Came in there without a bidet. Left without a bidet because they don't sell them.
That's actually, the Jennifer Love Hewitt vajazzling craze that happened as a happy accident because someone was using a bedazzled bidet.
Yeah, exactly. A great example of how one great thing begets another great thing.
Exactly.
So bidets are huge. Mm-hmm. What other hygiene phenomenons are inspired here in Maynard?
Towels are a constant challenge for people. So people like to have very cushy, very absorbent microfiber towels that they can then just roll around on. When you get out of the shower, you don't want every single person in town seeing you, so if you just slither over to a towel and roll around on it to dry, it's a lot more efficient.
Absolutely. I stopped by, there's a bathhouse here in Maynard. A bathhouse, what it looks like here in Maynard is a lot of very low trenches filled with tepid water, and then a series of bidet fountains that you stand in and it shoots you. And afterwards, you can partake in a proud Maynardy tradition where you lay on this giant towel that goes the length of the entire hallway and just slowly roll end over end until you're dry.
It's very hypnotic. A lot of the shamans do it as almost a rite of passage.
That's right, and a rite of passage it is, because oftentimes if you roll a little too fast, you might bump into one of the other gentlemen who has recently partaken. And the slapping of wet skin against each other is something I won't soon forget.
What other businesses will you not soon forget, Vince? I know that you took the time, you're a man of the people, you walked around to see all these different establishments. What caught your eye?
Caught my eye. I'm glad you asked, because I want to talk about a craze that is sweeping the nation and is being sort of subverted and reinvented here in Maynard. When you say caught my eye, I immediately jump to the 2D glasses, which are
2D
glasses, which are all the rage here in Maynard.
So are these just normal glasses?
No, they're not. And you don't make the mistake twice of asking a glasses vendor if they are. They help you see things in their flattest possible form.
So as opposed to 3D glasses that are having things extrude and pop out at you, you can see the topography of Maynard for what it truly is, a flat town and a flat state and flat land.
Absolutely true, Elliot. I'm wearing my pair of 2D glasses right now. It contributed to the fact that my depth perception was off and I rolled into another gentleman in the bathhouse. But you know what? These sort of things, that's what you come to a new town for. Mm-hmm. You don't come to not accidentally roll into another naked man in the bathhouse.
That's true. We have covered such a wide array of topics this episode for a very wide and sprawling town.
Absolutely. I think we've done a great job, but I think there are a few more facts we can unearth.
I agree. Let's do that in our favorite segment, Did You Know?
So listeners, we know that you don't always have time for a 90-minute podcast, but you will have time for a quick rapid-fire fast fact trivia segment where we fire 5 fast facts back and forth about the town that we're staying in. Elliot, as it seems to be custom, you have the first fact for me, don't you?
I do, Vince. Did you know there are a lot of loopholes that are glass and transparency related, but one of them takes the cake for being the most famous?
Elliot, please expound.
One intrepid businessman actually hired I.M. Pei, the guy who created the glass pyramid outside the Louvre, to fly it into Maynard to make his home.
Wow, fascinating. It sounds expensive. How did that go, Elliot?
Not well. People thought that it was an eyesore. They thought that when you're constantly dealing with flat rectangles and someone brings a 3D pyramid into your town, albeit transparent, people are going to get upset. It was also the cause for a lot of different bird migrations running into it and dying.
Birds are a huge fan of Maynard because they can fly low to the ground without much impediment. And that poor pyramid must have been spackled with the guts of 1,000 birds after being installed.
Yeah, and once so many bird guts are spackled over a transparent object, it gets in this gray legal area of it is visible now, and so do you have to tear it down or not? And so they end up shipping it back to the Louvre.
And you can still see some of the pigeon intestines on it to this day if mm-hmm. you say it. Yep. Some say that's the true treasure of the Louvre.
I agree.
It's hard to argue with that. Well, Elliot, I didn't know that. But did you know, of the many forms of expression that are well-regarded here in Maynard, origami is not one of them.
Wow.
Origami is seen in Maynard as the truest perversion of art, taking something flat and turning it into something three-dimensional.
Oh, interesting. So I'm assuming they're not a fan of people making paper cranes.
No, they're not. But they do like when you make, you know, fold that piece of paper up and then cut it so it turns into a little snowflake. They are fans of that.
Well, Vince, I had no idea that was true.
I just learned it recently myself.
I didn't know that. But Vince, did you know that Maynard is home to several fairly big name rappers?
Elliot, that seems really hard to believe given that we're in North Dakota, but enlighten me.
Well, they're big names in the sense that some of them have longer names and you know, some of them have a lot of syllables in them, but by rappers, I mean that they have been featured on MTV Cribs.
Oh, interesting. Well, mm-hmm. there are some interesting cribs to, mm-hmm. you know, use the parlance of the time here in Maynard. Mm-hmm. You tell me more.
So these rappers, of course, are very big on ostentation. They like to have a lot of things, a lot of sprawling possessions, and they like people to be able to see in their homes to see how cool it is. And so Maynard facilitates this by not having a giant hulking mansion, but a very long, wide home that a lot of these rappers are constantly just giving impromptu tours of, even though no one's listening.
It's given how vast these mansions are, it is sometimes not really feasible to stroll through Maynard without accidentally doing an episode of MTV Cribs about it.
That's true. Uh-huh. Yeah, you might just pass by a rapper's house and they'll invite you back to their hot tub where all their boys are chilling out.
And they do chill out, those boys.
Hard.
Harder than perhaps anywhere else in this great nation. Elliot, I didn't know that. But did you know, when it comes to refreshments, there are some things that people in Maynard enjoy and there are others that they are not quite so much a fan of.
Wow.
The people of Maynard aren't a big fan of carbonated beverages. Your Coca-Colas, your beers, for instance, they prefer their drinks to be flat. So if, for instance, you are going to have a soda pop, you have to leave it out for a long time. There's no regulation that deems it must be done. But if you go to a restaurant, for instance, you order the Coca-Cola, hopefully you're not expecting a fizzy drink because it's going to be pretty stale, it's going to be pretty syrupy, and it's going to be lukewarm.
I've heard about this. They actually have a decompression chamber that if you order a fizzy drink, they put it in and suck out all of the carbon dioxide from it so that it becomes flat and then you can drink it. It's very disappointing when you get one of these beverages. I'm not going to lie, but the people of Maynard love it.
And hey, to each their own.
And, you know, going off that, Vince, did you know that the people of Maynard have banned the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
There are a lot of great reasons to do exactly that, but I'm interested in Maynard's particular stance on it.
Well, there's obviously the famous scene where Charlie and his grandpa drink the fizzy cola and are propelled to the ceiling.
Yes, up towards the bladed fin. They have to burp. They have a bonding moment, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I'm guessing Violet Beauregard also doesn't sit very well with them.
No, a spherical girl rolling about is not going to be the appropriate artistic expression for the people of Maynard.
But that one little brat, dickhead cowboy kid who gets turned into thrown into the television.
Yes.
That is a famous scene.
Yes, they love Mike TV here.
Mike TV, that small portion of the movie has been cut out and made into its own mini-movie.
Yes.
People often watch at town gatherings.
Uh-huh. They don't like anything about the movie other than Mike TV. And, of course, all of Charlie's grandparents are constantly in a prone, laying-down position. They really like that.
That, yeah, they were. So it leads to a very conflicting moment for people Maynard when they're watching the movie. Yeah, when they begin the movie, they're, oh, we've got golden wrappers all laid out like this. We've got sedentary elderly people who are on their backs all the time. This is great. This is a great movie. And then suddenly there are fat German children being sucked into up and down multi-layer pipe systems and you know, spherical little girls. And, you know, they have a love-hate relationship with the film.
So if you go to see the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Maynard, it goes something like this. Introduction, the very flat logo on the screen.
They love that.
Then you've got Act 1, the golden tickets lying flat down. That goes on. They've edited a few scenes of that together. Then there's a scene in Act 2 with the grandparents.
Yep, that's right.
Not the one with Grandpa Joe jumping on the bed, of course.
That's forbidden.
You're meant to believe that these are invalid adults are constantly lying down. And then there's the scene with the digitized Mike flying through the air. And then the credits.
They play that one six times in a row.
Yeah.
And then they roll the credits.
Yes. And the credits, of course, are scrolling flat surface. So that's okay.
If you're going to the theater, which for some reason plays this movie basically every evening, don't go expecting the full-length film. It's a different animal here in Maynard.
But there's a lot of things that are unexpected in Maynard that we've come to love.
Absolutely. And listeners, maybe it's time to detail those in our farewell segment.
Wish you were here.
In a perfect world, you'd join us on our adventures, listeners. But since we're not living in that world yet, the next best thing is to give you an audio postcard from us to you. It goes a little bit like this. Dear listeners, wish you were here in Maynard, North Dakota.
A town that no building can exceed 2.7 feet tall in.
A town where they build the building first, then they burn it down strategically.
A town where flat is the new round.
A town where you can get a killer crepe, a long adjacency of pancakes, and a yoga mat with anything you want written on it.
A town where you wouldn't be more at home if you were a shaman.
And a town where you wouldn't be at home at all, since you can't have a home, because it's a structure larger than 2.1 feet.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Hey listeners, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode in Maynard, North Dakota. And I hope you join us next week when we're in Springfield, Utah.
Before Springfield, Utah had no Springfield. It was created as an homage to the titular family of America's longest-running animated sitcom, The Simpsons.